Hi, I'm Wendy Francis, nutrition therapist, emotional eating expert, and entrepreneur. I've helped countless people overcome their obsession with food and weight. Isn't it time you overcame what you had become and ignite who you were meant to be? Your time to become an overcomer starts now. Hey everyone, welcome to another edition of Overcoming Your Emotional Eating. I am so excited to be here today with another amazing practitioner. I've had such great luck lately. It's been awesome. And even more awesome for you guys who get to listen and learn from the people that have reached out to me who've wanted to be on this podcast. Today, I'm here with Amber Romaniak. She is an emotional eating, digestive, and hormone expert with 12 years experience helping high-achieving women create a level of body confidence, which I love. We all need body confidence. Intuition and optimal health through powerful mindset healing, self-care, and overcoming self-sabotage with food. She does this through addressing key negative thoughts, patterns, and limiting beliefs that keep women stuck in the same behaviors for years and years and even decades long. They haven't been able to break these until Amber helps them do this. Her podcast, the No Sugarcoating Podcast, love that title, has 2+ million downloads, over 600 episodes, and is listened to in over 90 countries. Amber overcame her own emotional eating journey after gaining and losing more than 1,000 pounds and spending over $50,000 on binge foods and spending 5 years balancing her hormones and digestion. She also dismantled her deep limiting beliefs and behaviors, keeping her stuck in that same looping pattern. Now she helps others achieve the biggest healing miracles of body freedom so they have the confidence and health to create amazing lives. Love that, Amber. Thanks so much for joining me.
Thank you for having me, Wendy. I'm so glad to be with you.
Yeah, I'm excited too. Did I butcher your last name, Amber?
No, that was totally right.
Good. Okay, perfect.
Thank you.
We have so much more to talk about than your last name, but I like for things like that to be right. It's important that we all get the recognition around our name that we deserve.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Agreed.
Yeah. And I'm excited that you're here with me. You've done so many things. And I, you know, as much as I love that you post, you know, how many pounds you've gained and lost, how much you've spent on binge foods. You know, I think the reality is I've worked with clients for years and coming up with that data for many of them is very difficult. How did you do that?
So I think part of it was just like realizing that I was either in a cycle of binging and purging, losing control of food, emotionally eating, and then I would gain 20, 30, 40 pounds in a few months. And then I would try to quote unquote gain control again and restrict and diet and exercise to try and quote unquote gain control. And then I would do so temporarily, fearing losing control the whole time and lose some of the weight. And then it was just like this back and forth all the time. And in the beginning, when I first started binge eating really intensively into that all or nothing mentality of either binging or heavily restricting, I gained 80 pounds in 4 months and like gained a lot of weight really quickly. And then it was that back and forth for a few years where it was just like 20, 30, 40 pounds every few months up and down. So it's very easy to gain and lose 1,000 pounds in a 5-year cycle when you're doing that, or even less it probably was. And then with the food, it was like, well, I was going to the organic store 5 or 6 nights a week and spending at least $70 to $80, $90 on binge food every time I went. And so if you calculate that over a few years, plus spending money on personal trainers I couldn't afford and all the sizes of clothing in my closet and all the quick fixes and things that I was trying to do, it's actually quite easy to accumulate to $50,000. And I know a lot of my clients have spent more on things to try and gain control. But those are some of the ways that I kind of could calculate what I was doing. And what's actually really interesting is a little while ago, I don't count calories or do anything like that, but I was curious. I was like, okay, I wonder how much I would eat in one sitting. And it was like 4,000 to 5,000 calories, like 300 or 400 grams of sugar, 200 or 300 grams of fat. Like, I don't know. I just am shocked that my body made it through all of that because it was very destructive for a very long time. Not just physically, but the emotional, the negative self-talk, the self-attack, the self-hatred. It was very deep. So I'm just so grateful that my body gave me a second chance and I was able to heal and overcome it all so that I, number one, wasn't suffering anymore. And then it became my purpose. So, yeah, that's how I kind of came up with some of those numbers.
Well, I mean, good for you for doing it because I think it's a really good teaching tool for other people. I'm certain many people out there have done the same or more, as you mentioned. It's just not something that everybody does or thinks back or looks at. And if they do, it's shame-based. And I hate
Yeah.
shame-based things. It's the worst
Yeah.
thing ever.
For sure.
But if you can get the data and understand it, that it's really, many people who have an addiction cycle,
Yeah.
like alcohol or drugs, right? They are taught to look at those things in therapy, so they understand the impact that it's had on their lives or the people's lives around them. But in food, I find or weight, I find so often that people really skirt that issue and they don't think about it because there's so much shame attached to it.
Yeah.
And sometimes in buying food, if you have a family, sometimes it is hard to differentiate what was your bill, what was their bill, where did all that money come into play? So, that's part of it too.
Yeah, and I think food's normalized. Like, we have to eat to be alive and to fuel our bodies. And so it's, we can't quit food and it's available everywhere. And I think that also makes it, when you're so tempted and you're in food addiction, to like say no to it, it's really hard because it's everywhere. And that accessibility. And then, yeah, justifying, oh, well, I'm having people over this weekend, so I'm going to get these things, or oh, my daughter likes this, so I'm going to get this for her, when it's that secret justification of why you're getting it for yourself, right? So it's a lot of justification.
And it's the heart, I believe, me personally, just from working in this field, but I really believe that food recovery, right? Whether it's bulimia, anorexia, binge eating, compulsive feeding, right? Whatever it is the hardest to recover from because we have to eat.
Yeah, we have to
We
eat.
have to eat to live, right? So we can be abstinent from drugs, we can be abstinent from alcohol, we can be abstinent from sex, porn, gambling. Like you can be abstinent from all that stuff and it doesn't impact your immediate life. But food, whole other ball game. Like
Yeah,
we need it.
100%.
Yeah, we need it to live. So I believe it's the deepest recovery to heal from.
Yeah,
And
but it's fully
so yeah,
possible.
absolutely. And how did you heal? Because I know that you've had your story with, the food addiction, bulimia, emotional eating. How did you heal?
Do you want the short version of that or the long version? Because it's a long story.
How long do you have?
Yeah. So for me, it was after my low point moments where I was eating out of my garbage can and eating out of the dumpster in the back alley because I would throw the food away to turn me off. That really like got me to this place that crushed the denial, because I was in denial that what I was doing wasn't a big deal for a while. Food is my friend. It makes me feel good. Who would I be without it? That makes me afraid, makes me uncomfortable. I didn't want to get uncomfortable. I didn't want to deal with any of the stuff. And so those moments really crushed my denial and fear of change and fear of the unknown and the overwhelm I was feeling around all the things that I was going to have to try and figure out how to address on my journey. I did it myself. I didn't get any help. And I think there was this like invisible guidance that was like, just take one step at a time, you're going to figure it out. But I had no knowledge of anything that I do now. Like zero knowledge. So it was like starting absolutely fresh. So I started to learn about some of the ingredients that I was eating first, things like processed sugar, which is very addictive, right? Like 10 times more addictive than cocaine. And when I started to learn about some of the ingredients that were in the foods that I was eating and that they were designed on purpose to make me addicted, it really helped me not feel crazy and take some of that shame and embarrassment off myself that I kept losing control. I started to realize it wasn't about willpower, it was about the way the food was designed. That was, of course, one component. And then as I started to change the way that I ate and eating more whole foods and eating more in a way that was supporting my blood sugar, I realized that it was much deeper when I still wanted to binge on like a whole bag of cashews or a whole jar of organic peanut butter and 10 bananas, that it was so much deeper. And that's when I had to get really lovingly authentic with myself and go, I have no idea what's triggering me. I need to figure out all of my triggers. I heavily dislike slash hate myself, so I need to learn how to slowly like and love myself. I feel incredibly unworthy and insecure. I don't know how to feel and process emotions. In fact, I'm terrified to do that. And I don't have any ways to help cope with stress, and I'm horrible at dealing with it. So I had to really work through all these pieces, starting to identify my triggers, which there are all kinds of triggers: physical, emotional eating triggers, emotional triggers, energetic, environmental, circumstantial, hormonal, emotional eating triggers. Like, there's so many. And I think that's one of the things that keeps people stuck, aside from that food is needed to survive, is like there's so many triggers that one person can have. And if they don't know all of them, it keeps you in the cycle. I also, right, started feeling through my emotions. So the first time I felt, I put a timer on for 30 seconds and was just like, just do it for a few seconds, because I was afraid something bad was going to happen if I felt through my emotions. Adopting different kinds of self-care and coping tactics like breath work, meditation, journaling, walking, like building awareness truly became my superpower, because the more aware I became, the more I was able to start catching my triggers, feeling through my emotions, giving myself what I really needed instead of food. And binging went from like 5 or 6 nights a week to like once or twice a week to like once a week to once every other week. And it really started to minimize. And I had to just really start working on catching the negative self-talk and apologizing to myself for that negative self-talk. And then complimenting myself, saying something kind to myself, even if I didn't fully believe it yet. I started into that process of rewiring my subconscious mind and dealing with my inner critic and learning how to tame that part of me that wasn't the true me that was calling the shots up until this point of healing. And then I had to essentially like detach from the number on the scale, quit dieting, quit trying to chase the next eating style, and learn how to eat in a way that felt really optimal for me, and learn how to love myself as I was. I knew at the time, because I was 80 pounds heavier, that my body wasn't at her natural set point. But what I started to realize about the weight piece is that my body's hanging on because she doesn't feel safe. So if weight is a safety mechanism and a protection mechanism, instead of trying to force weight loss, I'm going to keep healing and focusing on this healing journey. And I trust that as I heal, she'll let go and release as she feels ready to. And that's essentially what happened, is I didn't force the weight off when my body was ready and I stopped the binge eating and all these cycles that I was in. My body went to what was easy and natural for her, and I've attained that ever since. And so I think it's just really powerful when we learn how to listen to our bodies, and all these diets and quick fixes and self-sabotage keep us so disconnected. And that really keeps us in these cycles. And so, as I did my healing, I really befriended myself. I learned how to love myself. I stopped the self-sabotaging behaviors. And I really took ownership and responsibility for my life and my emotions and any stressful circumstances that I found myself in, realizing there's growth opportunity, learning opportunity, an opportunity to evolve and heal. And that's really what became the forefront for my journey, is that anything that comes up for me is an opportunity to heal. So that's some of the steps, long story short, that I took to really heal, setting boundaries, overcoming people pleasing, clearing the all or nothing, and taking a more balanced approach were all very important for me. Managing being an empath, these were all key pieces of my healing journey that helped me fully leave it behind me.
Excellent. You mentioned a lot of things in there, which I think is fantastic. I mean, first you mentioned the processed, you say processed, I'll say processed, right? It's like tomato, tomato. You're from Canada, I'm from America. I love it. But you mentioned the what was in the food, the processed sugar in the foods. What can you tell me and my listeners, for example, what would you consider a processed sugar?
So white sugar, cane sugar, brown sugar, corn sugar, maple syrup, or not maple syrup, corn syrup, high fructose corn syrup. To me, these are just pretty much stripped of all nutrient, and they give us such a massive dopamine high, that mood boosting neurotransmitter, that reward pleasure neurotransmitter. It gives us such a huge high, and they spike our blood sugar so much that then increases our hunger, gives us a huge crash that then makes us want more. So to me, those are some of the more ultra processed ones. Also, agave nectar, it's marketed as the natural sweetener, but they process it at such high heat that it becomes like just as bad as corn syrup. So we need to be looking into how these things are processed. But yeah, I was finding though, I was so addicted to sugar that even natural sweeteners that I was trying to use for a period of time, I would lose control having those as well because it was just like so incredibly addicted. I think my dopamine and serotonin were probably so low that I had absolutely no idea. My blood sugar was so out of whack. I was dealing with, when I started identifying my hormone issues, I had insulin resistance, I had high estrogen, I had high cortisol, I had a thyroid issue. My leptin levels were, I had leptin resistance, which is your fullness hormone. So I was not producing enough of that to help me feel satiated, and binge eating in these cycles pushes you into all that. And I didn't know any of that until I started that leg of my healing. And so I'm not surprised with why I couldn't feel satiated and why once I started, I couldn't stop due to the chain reaction of what was going on. But yeah, those would be some of the sugars that I would consider to be refined.
Yeah, excellent. Thank you. And you also just mentioned something that I find to be really interesting. And I don't think, well, I know it hasn't quite been addressed in this way, which I love that you're doing, and at least you said it in this construct of hormones and weight. And I know that people talk about it, but they don't really realize the intricacy between how one is related to the other,
Oh,
how
yeah.
both emotional eating or overeating can fuel hormone imbalance, and how hormone imbalance can fuel emotional eating. Can you talk more about that?
Yeah, it's so deep and it's not talked about enough. So essentially, I mean, which ones comes first? Well, if you've had trauma or really big stressors, or you had to become an adult as a child, like you probably were dealing with, dysregulated nervous system, high cortisol, and things like that from a very young age. If you started deep into emotional eating behaviors, from a young age, again, that all plays a role. So what I find with hormones, well, maybe we'll start with emotional or binge eating. So whatever kind of self-sabotage with food you're in. Obviously, your system is having trouble. You're having trouble coping and processing with stress, and you probably have high stress levels. So, even before you put food in your mouth, your stress level is high. Your nervous system's dysregulated. That means you're likely dealing with high cortisol, which is your stress hormone, or one of them anyway. And the higher your cortisol levels, the more it increases your ghrelin production, which is your hunger hormone. And then you have increased appetite and it's easier to overeat. We also have more processed sugar, processed carb, and salt cravings when our cortisol is high. And high cortisol dulls our ability to produce leptin, which is your fullness cue. So it's incredibly easy to overeat when you have high cortisol. And we're starting to already see how it impacts these other hormones. It also will cause bigger spikes and drops in blood sugar, hypoglycemia, low blood sugar. Which means if you wait too long to eat, you have an instant energy mood crash. You have instant sugar cravings. You want to eat the first thing you can find because you're dizzy, faint, lightheaded, shaky, and it's not a fun feeling. And then it's easier to make a poor choice. And then that triggers the all or nothing. Screw it. I shouldn't have eaten that. And then I'm going to just plow through whatever I want for the rest of the day or the week. And so that's just one hormone issue. And then I see a lot of women. And it's usually a precursor to low progesterone with that high cortisol is low progesterone. And that's one of our sex hormones. And estrogen also plays a role in this somewhat, but I find progesterone more. So we need enough progesterone. It is the calming hormone. And if our progesterone is low, we'll feel more anxiotic. And if we're feeling more anxiotic, that's also a symptom of high cortisol. It'll be so much easier to want to go to food for comfort and to cope and to numb out because anxiety is incredibly uncomfortable to have to deal with. Also, when progesterone is low, we need enough of that to help our body circulate dopamine, so the reward, pleasure neurotransmitter, serotonin, the like mood stabilizer, GABA, which helps you fall asleep and again helps with consistent mood, and oxytocin, which is your self-connection, connection to others neurotransmitter. When these are depleted, you feel flatlined. You may not feel anything. Heightened anxiety. You don't feel safe processing emotion. You don't feel you have capacity to process emotion. And you're probably not sleeping well. And if you're not sleeping well, you're going to have those high cortisol, heightened cravings, et cetera. So these are some of the imbalances that I see my clients struggling with and that I struggled with and created through binge eating and self-sabotage. That really keep these behaviors going because they increase your cravings for processed foods. You don't sleep as good. You're tired. You're brain fogged. You're in a more of an I don't care mentality. You have less capacity to cope. So you want comfort more easily from food or something that's going to give you that temporary dopamine pleasure feeling. But then we crash. And then it just keeps fueling these vicious cycles. Obviously, if your insulin levels are really high and you're in insulin resistance, that's one of your blood sugar hormones, you are going to have increased cravings and increased appetite. If your thyroid is underfunctioning, which for most women, it's an underfunctioning, sluggish hypothyroid, you don't feel hungry usually through the first half of the day because your metabolism is more, slowed and it's harder to produce ghrelin that makes you hungry. And so you think, oh, I'm not hungry, I'm not going to eat, which is the worst thing we can do. And then we end up overeating or binging later in the evening because we have big spikes and crashes in blood sugar and increased ghrelin that makes you hungry. And then it makes it so much easier to binge. And then you gain weight more easily because when your thyroid is sluggish, you can't circulate your lymphatics. You can get constipated more easily. Your metabolism is slower, so it's easier to put on and harder to lose. And then, of course, we panic and we restrict calories and try to exercise more and then gain more weight and then get more frustrated with our body. So we haven't been properly taught how to deal with hormone imbalances, and that eating less and exercising more is actually going to amplify the imbalances just as much as emotional eating, overeating, or binge eating. So these are some of the like key examples, though there's more of like how these hormone imbalances fuel emotional and binge eating. And of course, the more we binge or emotionally eat or whatever behavior you're in, you're going to make your cortisol levels higher. You're going to have those increased appetite. You're going to keep messing your blood sugar up more. You could potentially amplify or create a thyroid issue like that sluggish thyroid I was talking about. You deplete your progesterone because the more inflamed and stressed your body, the harder time you have ovulating if you're in your cyclical years, and your egg quality is more poor because your body is inflamed. You need to ovulate through your cyclical years to produce the majority of your progesterone and estrogen. And then into late perimenopause, menopause, and postmenopause, you start producing the majority of your progesterone and estrogen via your adrenal glands, which also produce your cortisol. So if your adrenals are stressed and you've had a history of chronic cortisol issues, you're going to have a hard time producing the progesterone and estrogen needed. And that depletion is a huge part of what fuels these cycles because they dictate how you feel and your mood and your hunger levels. And that also impacts your weight and your metabolism and all these other pieces. So it is incredibly important that while we heal our relationship with food, we are working on supporting our hormone health and getting to the roots of those imbalances, that we are working on our blood sugar, our gut health, just small, simple changes, but things that are going to be very effective in helping you heal.
Absolutely. Thank you for that.
Yeah, of course.
I agree with that. That's the research, and I'm so tired of it being about food.
Oh, so
I'm
much better.
exhausted. I mean, from the time I started in this profession 32 years ago, it was about food then.
Yeah.
And I hate that it still is for some people. And it's just not for women. And it can be a
Yeah.
little bit different for men. Although I will say that the underserved male population are the men that are overweight, because I absolutely believe that they have a estrogen imbalance, that they're way too
Yes.
high on their estrogen, and
Yes.
nobody, no doctor is testing those men.
Nope.
And PDB, who was he was on my podcast a few months ago. He's lost almost 300 pounds now. He's done
Yeah.
amazing. He started over 600. But he figured out that that was part of his issue. And
Yeah.
I believe that those men are underserved, just like
Yeah.
I believe women with weight issues are underserved. And I
Yeah.
absolutely am on a bandwagon to help perimenopausal, menopausal women.
Yeah.
Because one, I'm there. It's my genre, right? I'm
Yeah.
54 this year. Oh my God, just turned 54. And two, I just think that for all women, we have discounted this hormonal component. And
Oh, yeah.
it's not just the sex hormones, as you mentioned,
No.
which I like that you talk about, because everyone's like, oh, my estrogen's fine, or oh, I get my period every month, so I'm fine. I'm like, no, there's cortisol,
Yeah.
there's insulin, there's leptin, there's ghrelin, there's, and
Yeah.
then you've got the neurochemistry. So I
Mm
really love that you mention all of those things, because my passion, my desire going into 2026, and I'm actually a part of one business, creating another business, and then now having been asked to come on in a third business for children who I believe are also out of whack
Oh,
hormonally.
totally. Yes.
to really help the country. I hope nationwide to bring this to the forefront, because this is it. Like, this is weight gain, weight loss, right? It is not about calorie in, calorie out. I absolutely agree with what you're saying with processed sugars. High fructose corn syrup is almost like the devil incarnate, so to speak, in my mind, in what we've created for addiction when it comes to food, as well as some other things. But, you know, so that's definitely part of it. But what it's doing to our physiology and our hormone dysregulation, which is then impacting us emotionally and vice versa. We have to start to look at the whole picture and, you know, stop not eating certain things because they have more calories than others.
Oh gosh, yeah, exactly. Because one of the other epidemics is the seed oils, and if we look, and the other epidemic is inflammation. And if we don't deal with the root causes of what is causing this chronic inflammation in so many people, that disrupts your hormones significantly. That suppresses your ability to produce your neurotransmitters. That will make your mood lower. That will give you more anxiety. That will make it easier to hang on to weight and open you up over a period of time to compromise you into potential autoimmune conditions, serious inflammatory issues that we can prevent, or we can completely minimize your symptoms of if you're in them already. But yeah, inflammation is completely ignored. And when we look at all the inflammatory ingredients that are put in food products, including seed oils, including processed sugars, even, a lot of the wheat and dairy in North America is so much more processed, than in Europe. And so we look at all these things that we're told to eat on a regular, oh, that's seed oils don't cause inflammation. They've been in food forever. And it's like, well, no, when I eat a seed oil and I have brain fog for 4 days and my mood drops and my energy drops and I feel swollen and I'm retaining water, no, like it's having an impact. So why would I want to eat that on a regular basis, right? So as we heal, we really start to learn and feel what our bodies do and don't want, and what is moderate and what, like, I don't want to eat seed oils, like, period. I don't want to feel like crap for 4 days. It's a personal choice, right? And as you become attuned to your body and you feel how optimal you can feel, and then you have something that makes you not feel optimal, you really go, like, is that something I'm willing to tolerate often? Right. And I think that attunement is so powerful because it really helps us heal. But yeah, the inflammation is a root fueler of all these hormone issues. That then fuels all these other behaviors, and obviously the binge and emotional eating fuel inflammation too. So it's multifaceted, but it's so empowering to learn about it all as you're healing, so that you realize again, it's not you. It's not that you didn't have willpower. We've not been properly equipped or educated about any of this. And the diet and weight loss industry are dangling all their shiny crap over in the corner, like, oh, just take this pill, just take this thing, just. Oh, yeah, this is the fad diet of the year. And it's up to you of whether you want to keep being distracted by all of that and stay disconnected from your healing, or to actually start going inward and doing the deeper work, and also potentially, like, working with people that are well versed in this and that can give you the information. Because one quick thing I want to mention about hormones and testing is it's one thing to go to your doctor and to ask for the tests. If they do them all, I would be shocked, because half the time they won't even do half of them, and they refuse to test cortisol, even though it's like the key domino hormone issue that fuels everything else. And even if they order, often they'll get everything back and go, oh, everything looks good. It's all in your head. It's just stress. The ranges are way too big for testing. There's a much smaller functional range that is actually normal. And so if you're being told everything's fine, it's in your head, and you know in your heart of hearts something isn't right, you're having the symptoms, you've got to go get a second opinion, third opinion, or even be willing to go and see some other kind of healthcare practitioner, because you deserve to get the answers, right? And if you don't feel well, like, you've got to be advocating and going elsewhere. So I just think that that's incredibly important, because so many women come to me and say, well, my doctor tests everything and said it's all normal. I'm like, let me look at your labs. Let's do a second opinion. And I see things and they finally feel validated. And then they start to feel better, which proves that all kinds of hormone issues can happen in the normal range because it's way too big.
Absolutely. And you know, if you get them tested, you'll see that there's, you know, all these different ranges. Are you in the luteal phase or the follicular phase? And most people aren't taught how to do that. So, you know, it's really important that you get tested, but then you know how to interpret them. And I interpret labs for some of my clients too, and it is extremely empowering to understand that and what it does. It absolutely does to your body.
100%. Yes, I totally agree with you.
Yep. So I agree. I mean, we need better methods of testing than we currently have. I mean, there's a whole lot of overhaul that has to be done in the testing methodology and assessment methodology, and then what we do with respect to that, no doubt. Besides that, do you think there's any other weight loss? We've kind of talked about a lot, but is there any other weight loss blocks that you would consider?
Yeah, 100%. So you touched on this one. This is a hormonal one, but estrogen dominance for sure. I see so many women with high estrogen and then their insulin is high and they're in resistance and it feels next to impossible if you have high estrogen and high insulin. It just causes a lot more inflammation in the body. Inflammation is a weight
And a
loss
lot more
block.
crying, sorry.
Oh yeah.
And a lot more crying and
Yeah.
emotionality. Sorry, go ahead.
Totally. Well, and then your sleep's compromised with hormone issues, and if you're not sleeping well, you're inflamed and puffy and anything that puts your body into a fight or flight stress response that doesn't make your body feel safe is going to be a weight loss block, right? So you could have had traumas, or your inner child could be wounded. You could have gone through circumstances like I was bullied on the bus when I was 5. That made my body not feel safe. I had to heal that down the road when I was doing all my healing because I had no idea how that could impact the body. So working on healing with your inner child. Healing the negative self-talk, because as soon as you go into negative self-talk and you're putting yourself down, you go into a stress response that makes your body not feel safe. So filling that void, building your worth, learning how to love yourself. Unworthiness is a huge weight loss block. I also really think that when it comes to pressure, like putting pressure on yourself, that you have to lose weight and keep it off, and that you have to lose a certain amount of weight by a certain time. Anytime you put pressure on yourself, you're spiking your cortisol. And one of the first symptoms of high cortisol is hanging on to weight and troubles losing because your body wants to protect you because you don't feel safe. The last two priorities when your cortisol is high is for, reproduction and weight loss. So if we start to look at it in the facet of my body's trying to protect me and I'm putting pressure on her to try and lose weight, restriction is a weight loss block, over-exercising is a weight loss block. Too many screens and too much time on your phone is very stimulating. That spikes cortisol, that's a weight loss block. I also think that when we are in this weight body battle where we're trying to diet and restrict and then we're losing control of food, obviously that all contributes because it's so stressful in the body. Certain gut issues can be a weight loss block. Candida, liver issues, constipation, sluggish lymphatic system. And then we get into the if you don't believe you can, trust your body and that she's capable of releasing it and keeping it off, and you're constantly in the dread of I just lost it, it's only a matter of time before it comes back. You're gonna keep that's gonna keep happening for you, especially if you've done it in ways that are mindless, right? So I think part of it is to really understand and be aware that there are many potential weight loss blocks. Several. You can have several. And again, if you're focused on eat less, exercise more, and all this shiny old stuff that doesn't work, you're going to keep disconnected from actually learning what your body needs and why you're hanging on to the protection in the first place. Because when I released the weight for the final time, I had stopped binge eating, but all my hormone issues and my wounded inner child, I think, really contributed to putting it back on. And what helped me release it was actually not focusing on it, was focusing on healing, working on my hormones, my blood sugar, my inflammation, healing with my inner child. Building self-worth and self-love. And I also had to quit the gym for a while because I still had this limiting belief of if I need to exercise to lose weight and keep it off. But I was exercising and that was stressing my body out and putting her over the edge. And so in that case, I quit the gym and all of a sudden I was sleeping better, my stress levels were dropping. I was walking and doing gentle yoga, but I really felt this need to rest. And as I shifted that, it's like the weight fell off and I didn't have to focus on it. And that really proved to me that movement should not be to lose weight and keep it off. It should be for my mental health. It should be for my strength. It should be choosing kinds of movement that I love rather than forcing myself to do things that I hate, right? Because that's also going to stress your system out and make you hang on to protection. So it's like, we need to be aware of what we're actually unconsciously using as forms of self-punishment, aka diets and exercise, and clear those out of the way so that again we can focus on this safety piece. So there's a lot
Totally agree.
potential
Yep.
blocks.
Totally agree. There can be anything, right? From psychological to physiological to physical. So it's really important to flesh all of those out. as you're losing. Totally
Mm-hmm.
agree. I want to shift the conversation for just a minute because, when you and I first spoke, we kind of had this common ground that I haven't actually had with another practitioner who has reached out to me. And I have dealt with a number of clients who have done this and were terribly ashamed by it and had never heard of anybody else in their life doing it before. When you reached out to me, you mentioned it, and I thought, oh my God, there's somebody else I could talk to about with it. And so when we first spoke, we talked about something called shoeing and spitting. And I don't know if there's a real technical term for it, but that, and that's what I've called it with clients. And I've had a few clients who have really been in this cycle. And for those of you who don't know about it, I'm going to have Amber explain it to you. But I'd love to really kind of give you the floor for a minute because I've had clients struggle with this. We have overcome it in different ways, but it is not talked about. And there are a number of people out there, and I think way less than is reported because there's so much shame around chewing and spitting, but it goes on for so many people. And it's not just with binge eating. It is with anorexia, and it is with bulimia, and it is with compulsive overeating and emotional eating. It is along all spectrums. And so this is not just a one facet disease, so to speak. And so I'd love for you to explain a little bit more about that to my listeners. What you've seen, what you maybe believe it's created from, and if you've worked with anybody with it, and what has helped.
Yeah, so I went through it myself and I've had some clients that have dealt with it, and my reasoning at the time was like, well, I can still get my dopamine high, right? I still it's about, again, you don't feel safe feeling, so I'm gonna put this food in my mouth, get a dopamine high, but then I'm gonna spit it out so that I don't have to deal with the weight gain. I don't have to deal with feeling uncomfortably full. I don't have to, even though there's shame, I just feel like there's less shame if I'm not over full and going to bed uncomfortable. Like I'll sleep better. Right. But it's still about trying to regulate. It's still about trying to grip for some form of control. It's still about trying to emotionally soothe, numb out, check out, and not feel or avoid dealing with what's actually going on. It's a lack of ownership responsibility, just like any form of self-sabotage is with food, in my opinion. And also, yeah, avoiding the weight gain, right? If I spit it out, I'm not going to intake all the calories and I'm not going to gain the weight. I often find that if we have troubles dealing with things like anxiety, stress, or gain shame piled on top of shame, makes us want to self-sabotage and numb out even more. And if we're dysregulated and overwhelmed, and we have this high cortisol that I'm talking about, and you're trying to like calm down from feeling overloaded, all of this is what will drive it. And one of the main reasons that I've like learned about since I stopped doing it long ago and I've seen clients is, once we start putting the food in our mouth, not only do we get that dopamine high from the flavors and the ingredients, but the chewing stimulates your vagus nerve. And that is a huge part of what helps to regulate your central nervous system. And it temporarily calm, right? Like calms the nervous system. So the brain essentially starts wiring a neural pathway that is like, chewing this food gives me relief. It is safe. It's going to give me a dopamine high. And so that's a big part of that whole cycle is how we start to associate with a temporary calming of the system without all of the after effects that, binge eating and all these other behaviors could provide for me, and the cost of giving into them. But, then we essentially like don't necessarily, aside from the shame and the guilt of doing the behavior, we feel we avoid a lot of consequence. You can get your dopamine high without consequence, we convince ourselves, right? You get the taste, the pleasure, you get the stimulation, but without ingesting the calories. So we get into that cycle. But there is, of course, the cost of the shame or the embarrassment or the guilt of, I can't believe I just behaved like that and I was spitting food into a garbage bag. Of course, like I've already said, the fear of weight gain. So we avoid kind of that consequence. Maybe there's certain foods that you restrict yourself of because they're bad. I don't want them. They're forbidden. You haven't been able to establish like a peace with food. And so if you're in a restrictive state, then you think, oh, I can just eat this and I don't have to deal with like more cravings or losing control. I can at least taste it. And so I think there's all these things that like we may or may not realize are driving this behavior. Obviously, there's whatever your traumas, your stressors, whatever's triggering you is fueling this behavior. It is a survival mechanism. Like I said, it's about comfort. It's about self-soothing. It's about that temporary little calm for those few moments before all the emotion ramps up around, oh, I did that again, just like with any of those behaviors. And so I think that we're shoving down a lot of our emotions, or we're numbing out, or we're checking out, we're procrastinating, we're avoiding feeling or dealing with something or more than one thing. And I think for some people who are in perfection all or nothing mentalities, it's a way for them to think that they're in control. It's like, well, I'm having this, but even if I eat the whole bag of chips, in essence, I'm not losing control because I'm getting rid of it. Which again, then we're not dealing with perfection or all or nothing, and we're just enabling those cycles of, continuing. Like, if I eat this bag of chips, it's not going to ruin the rest of my day. I'm only tasting it, I'm not eating it. And so there's all these justifications that we have around why it's a better, less destructive behavior. So those are some of the things that I think is behind it. I do think things like high cortisol, low dopamine, heavy learned cycles of dieting and restriction all fuel this. Because again, at some point, we're going to boomerang and go and eat the things we're quote unquote not allowing ourselves to have. And in this case, again, just spitting it out. So those are some of the things that I've learned, or that I think it's rooted in, that I've observed clients with justifications. And then, yeah, what really fueled my desire to do it. And then it was just like with the other pieces, I was like, well, I've got to take ownership. This is no different than emotional eating in the sense of I am spitting it out, but I'm still doing it for the exact same reason. So I need to address the roots of those reasons and shift it, right? So that's what I find is at the roots. But again, the more you do it, just like anything, it can feel hard to not do it because you are the pathway in your brain. And so we have to work on, I'm triggered. The pathway lights up to tell you to go and chew and spit out the food or whatever you're doing. And it's starting to become aware that we're going to have to pattern interrupt and go, okay, so my body, my brain rather, is telling me to go do this, but actually this isn't serving me. So what do I really need instead of this food, this dopamine high, this numbing? What am I feeling right now? What's triggering me? And I think that's one of the steps that we take to start addressing and overcoming is really that ownership and responsibility.
I agree with you. I just think that I wanted to mention it. And the clients that I have had and have had the honor in working with around that behavior, for them, I have seen it to be harder to break than any other pattern. Period. End of story. That pattern, for some reason, it just once it takes hold, it doesn't let go. Part of it, I think, is the shame that underpins it, because I think I've read it in one textbook, which is bizarre to me because I've had so many clients do it. I also recognize that it is a huge thing that happens in the fitness industry, fitness model industry, bodybuilding industry, and it's probably been going on there longer than any other place, to be honest
For
with
sure.
you. And for me, my heart goes out to anybody who does that behavior, because that takes hold of people more than anything else. And even though I know it's not like socially acceptable to say that you have anorexia or socially acceptable that you're a binge eater, the truth is, to say that you chew and spit probably is way even less, because it's so unheard of and it's so untalked about. So thank you for speaking about that.
Of course.
And I do think that we have to find a way for those individuals who do that behavior. There's a lot of my clients that have even gone into treatment centers time and time and time again and have never talked about that behavior, because there's so much shame underneath it. And so if you don't go into treatment with that as one of your goals, you're certainly not going to treat it.
Yeah,
Right?
100%.
So, there's so much we could go into around that, and maybe I'll have you on for another podcast just talking about that, because it's such a big deal. In a way that people don't realize, I think. And because there isn't the quote unquote consequence of the calories, so to speak, I think that we think it's inconsequential. But the reality is, and for most of my clients, they didn't feel that. They really felt like the amount of calorie that there was some calories that actually still still had in their body, and they could chew and spit all day and would actually go up a pound or two the next day,
Yep,
mainly more because of
totally.
the hormone pieces
Yep.
and the cortisol pieces that we've talked about and water weight gain, et cetera. So it is certainly not a way to scoot out of weight gain
No.
by any means. And it is an addictive pattern more so than I've seen other components
Yeah.
realistically. So
Yeah, that justification of it being less invasive definitely can keep it going too.
yeah,
Yeah.
absolutely. Yeah. Yep. And it's not something anybody talks about. So when we keep things in the dark and we can't bring
Yeah.
light to them, then they wind up festering and growing even stronger. So,
Yeah.
Amber, I could talk all day to you. This has been fantastic. Thank you so much for joining me today. Where can my listeners find more about you?
Yeah, so thank you for having me. It has been an amazing chat. My website is amberapproved.ca. If you're wondering if you're struggling with binge or emotional eating, you can take a free quiz that I have there. The No Sugar Coating Podcast is the podcast. We have over 600 episodes, so come and take a listen if you feel called. If you want to connect to explore going on the healing journey, I have a 30-minute complimentary consultation you can book. And then I have all kinds of resources and things on the website. And I'm on social media, primarily Instagram at Amber Romaniuk, Romaniuk. So come and follow and learn. And yeah, just excited to support whomever wants to go on the healing journey or learn more about it.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Amber. And we'll have all her tags, all your tags, and where they can find you also in
Awesome.
the in your bio on our posts with
Sounds
respect to
great.
this podcast. So thank you so much for joining me. I really appreciate you coming on. You're a wealth of knowledge. Thank you.
Oh, thank you for having me. I appreciate it. Thanks for listening. If you like this podcast, share it with a friend. Rate, review, and subscribe. You never know who you'll help become the next overcomer.